Good afternoon. So last time, we looked at an example of an RPC system, which is gRPC, and we saw sort of how it chose to design its interface. We saw that maybe it wasn't so super concerned about being sort of completely like a normal local function call because it had other issues. So for example, it made you have this object to represent the functions on the server in its Python version of the API because, we needed some way of representing what server we were contacting and so on, and they felt that, that was more convenient than having some interface where we made a function call would look more like a normal function call because we needed to specify the information. They had this interface description language, which was really designed to be programming language neutral, which meant that it kind of didn't look like what we would do in Python or what we do in C++, because, it needed to work for both of them. And they had this idea that arguments and return values would be always this struct-like thing, and part of this was because they wanted to allow sort of changes to the arguments by changing what's in the struct, and they had sort of a well-defined way of how we could add things to a struct and still have older versions of our servers and clients be able to safely know what fields they have information about and which ones they don't. And also, the struct idea allowed us to rename fields without breaking compatibility if we wanted to do that. Then we talked a little about dealing with failures. So, So in a network, sort of the usual things we think of a network doing that are going to be sort of failures or kind of like failures are that messages can be lost or messages can be reordered. Okay. Our mailbox abstraction is, not always going to get the message there. And if we send a bunch of messages, they aren't always going to get there in the same order. And we can handle this with acknowledgments, meaning that when I get a message, I can say, yes, I got it, and send a message back. And with sequence numbers to deal with reorderings. I can say, this is message one, this is message two, this is message three, and then someone receiving those messages can realize what to do if they receive message two before message one, or if I receive replies from those messages, I can know, this is the reply for message two, not message one, and know what to do about that. We mentioned that even if we're doing this, when we receive no acknowledgement, so when we send a message out, and we wait for a while, and we still don't have an acknowledgement, we can't really know what happened. We can retry sending the message, but we might still not get an acknowledgement. And that doesn't mean that our message didn't get there. It just means that something's happening now that keeps us from getting an acknowledgement. So it could be the case that our message got there, but the acknowledgement was lost. Or it could have been the case that our message didn't get there, and that's why we're not getting an acknowledgement. And there's no way of... And this sort of applies for other things which use the network. So for example, if we have an RPC library, even if the RPC library is programmed to do acknowledgements and do the best it can to retry sending things and so on, if the RPC library says, I gave up, it doesn't look like the server got anything as far as I can tell, it can't be sure. All it can know is that the server didn't reply. Doesn't mean the server didn't get the message and do something with it. And this is problematic for making a distributed system because, you want different machines to coordinate, and now if failures happen, we kind of can't really know what the other machine was doing. And we're going to talk about dealing with that today. And to talk about dealing with failures, we need to think about not only how networks fail, but also about how machines fail. And we're going to use mostly the fail-stop model. So where machine failures are going to look the same as network failures. That when a machine fails, it's as if it loses power, it just stops responding to messages, it stops getting messages. Or alternately, maybe the machine doesn't fail that way, but we detect that it's broken and we just ignore it, as if it's just off the network, even if it's there, we'll just say, this machine's broken, so yes, it can receive messages, but we're just going to not have it do anything right now because we know it's broken. We know it can't store anything on its disk, so we'll just pretend it's unplugged. So that's what we'll call a fail-stop model. So when the machine fails, it stops. And there's sort of another extreme failure model we could have, which is that we could say when a machine fails, it can do anything. So for example, our machine could say, yes, I got your RPC message, and then discard it deliberately. Dealing with those sorts of failures is much harder. And in reality, of course, machines don't actually fail in that way, but machines also fail in ways definitely other than just stopping working. So reality is somewhere in between. We're going to talk about dealing with failures assuming this fail-stop model, even though, yes, in the real world, probably we want something that handles more types of failures, but it's not clear. We probably don't want to go to the full extreme because it just takes a lot of effort of handling what if, any machine when it's breaking could do, any weird thing. So questions about things we covered last time? Yes?
So I think you said one of the things that can happen in the PSMT model is that the server can send an acknowledgement even if it didn't receive the message. Is that something that can actually ever happen in the real world?
So the question is, under the Byzantine model, one of the things that's happened is the server could acknowledge a message it never received. Is that something that can happen in practice? So the sort of things we're worried about, which make people think of the Byzantine model, is like, what if the machine or the network like flips bits? So a way we could acknowledge a message we never received is like we have, this is message number 10, and we flip a bit in that 10 and change it to 12. And that would be a sort of example of how that sort of failure would happen. Does that answer your question? And because and when we're worried about things like flipping bits, like reasoning about how to deal with failure is a lot harder. Yes. Other questions? Okay. So when we left off last time, we were talking about distributed transactions, that we want two machines to agree to do something or not to do something. So this is going to be like what we did with file systems. We're going to have one operation that has multiple steps. But unlike our file systems, these multiple steps are not just going to be different places on a disk. They're going to be operations on different machines. And we want the operation to either all happen or all not happen, even if something breaks. So just like with the file system case, when I moved a file, I wanted the file to be in the previous directory or the new directory, not some mix of the two. Here, when I'm doing something that involves changing things on two different machines, I want both of those machines to be changed, or neither of them, not something in between. Even if one of the machines goes down and comes back up in the middle of the operation, or the network goes on the fritz in the middle of the operation. And sort of as an example, let's say we have a course database that's split across a couple of machines, and we have machines A and B store our student records, say split up, so students with last names at the beginning of the alphabet are machine A, students with last names near the end of the alphabet are machine B, and machine C stores our course records. And one thing we might want to do is add a student to a course, and maybe we update the student record to point to the course, and the course record to point to the student. So that's an update on two different machines. And we want to do this in a consistent way. So even if we have failures, we don't want to have some sort of inconsistency about whether a student is in a course. We don't want you to look at your SIS webpage and it says you're registered for a course, and me to look at the webpage for that SIS webpage for that course and it says you're not listed. That'd be very bad. And we're going to say that because things failures, in a failure, it's okay to say no, and we can retry later. But we want to make sure we don't like half do it at any point. So let's look at sort of a naive solution that doesn't work. So let's say we execute code on the machine with the student records when you try to add a course, and that machine is going to send a message to C saying, add the student to the course. It's going to wait for a response from machine C. Machine C might say, no, the course is full. And then after it gets that response, it's going to add the student to the course. And this is going to have problems with respect to consistency, both from a perspective of when there's no failures and when there are failures. We'll start with when there's no failures. And let's say, you know, there's no failures. And let's say I'm querying from a third machine. I'm asking, you know, what courses is this student in and what students are in this course? So which are possible to observe? So I have A, then I check the student record and it says you're in the course. I check the course record and it says you're not. But if I check again, it's the same thing. I check the student record after that and it says, nope, they're still in the course. Check the course record, they're not in the course. Is that possible? So that's A and B. And C and D is, I check the student record, you're not in the course. I check the course list, but they are listed. I check back at the student record for D, and nope, still not in the course. Check at the course record, nope, they're still there. Which of these sort of contradictory scenarios are possible? Like if I could pull up, you know, my course page for a course and some student's SIS page for what courses they're in. And the key thing is while we're doing the add operation. The add operation's maybe a little slow. Which of these could happen? If you win or two. Question?
Sorry, to clarify, after we tell the remote that we want to add the student course, we're waiting for acknowledgement from the remote before actually adding them.
The question, after we tell the remote to add a student course, we're waiting for an acknowledgement? Yes. So we're going to make sure that operation actually happens because we want to deal with what if the message doesn't get there. And also, we mentioned we want to deal with what if the remote machine says, oh, this course is full, sorry. Like some more time? Okay, so who thinks A is possible? Couple. Who thinks B is possible? Couple. Okay. And who thinks C is possible? So more people. And who thinks D is possible? People also. Okay, so let's start with the one we had the most consensus was possible, which is C. So C is that if I check the student record, they're not in the course. And what we can observe is we don't actually add the student to the course before here. So if I check any time here, the student is not in course. Right, because we haven't started the add the student to the course on the student record. But if I check any time before the actual remote operation happens, I should probably draw this, be consistent. So any time up here, then on the course record, the student's not in the course. So up here at the beginning, it's consistent. If I check the course record, the student's not there. If I check the student record, the student's not there. But in this sort of overlap here, in this time here, between when we do the add to the course and we do the add to the student, we can get this inconsistent result described in C. That if I check the student record, they're not in the course. If I check the course record, they are. So this is where C is possible and D is possible. C is possible. And C, we say, oh, but if we double check, they're still correct. And that's because we could check twice in this time window. We don't know how long it takes to get the acknowledgement back. That could be a while, especially if the network has some hiccup. It's not like a failure, just slow. And we also could have D, where D would happen if we first checked here. C is if we could happen if we check first. C is the, sorry. D is if we both check in here. And C would be that we check once here and we check once here. So we could get that we check twice and they're, and the course, it seems like they're in the course. They're really in the course, but they're not according to the course, but they're not in the course according to the student course list. Or we could check, and it could change while we're in between our checks. So we have this sort of brief period of inconsistency that's just sort of part of this operation because of the way we're doing things. Because we're not actually updating the two records at once. So we're going to have this period where you can observe that one has changed and one has not. And that period can last a lot of time. So we could check multiple times and it could still be the case. Yes? What are we checking again? So for C, I probably should rephrase this more carefully. If we double check, then now they're both the same.
Oh, so both the student and the mobile records.
Yeah, match now and don't disagree. Yeah, sorry, I should have been more careful in explaining that and probably write the slide differently. Yes? What does double checking mean again? So that means I look at the student record, they're not in the course. I look at the course record, they're in the course. So that's a disagreement. But if I check the student record now and then check the course record, now it's both the same. They're both either in the course or not in the course. Does that answer your question?
So double checking, can you check again later?
Yeah, I'm just checking again later. I'm just thinking that this is sort of imagine I'm just manually using the sys interface. So double checking is I go back and look at the web page again. Really? Yeah. So for C, I have two errors. That's because I have the first time I'm checking and the second time I'm checking. So the first time I check in this time window where we haven't adjusted the student record yet, so they're not in the course, and we have adjusted the course record. And the second time I check, we've adjusted both records. Yes. Yeah. Or alternately, we could get the same result by checking at two different times, but they're both in this time window. We could look at the student records and then look at the course records, but still before anything actually happens. Yeah. So when I say both agree, my intention here is that they both say you're in the course or not in the course. They don't say something that contradicts each other. Yes. Question in C, how could they both agree? So what I'm saying that if I check again, then now they both agree. So something changes if I check again. Other questions? Yes. So let's say we added locally first. Your question is, let's say we tried to fix this by adding locally first before we send the request to remote server. So there's two issues with that. So one issue is I can have the scenario described in A and B happen. Now, so I can have a different type of disagreement instead, but that's still probably a problem. Another issue is that if we mentioned sort of our assumption is that we don't actually know you can be added to the course yet. So we're adding you before we're sure that the operation's possible. Does that answer your question? Okay. Other questions? Okay, so let's say we have a failure. Now what's possible? So let's say a machine loses power. And I'll write down what I should have written down on the earlier slide, which is by both agree, I mean both, you know, say in or not in. In or not in is what I mean by agree. What do you mean by machine power loss and restart? So my assumption here is that one of the machines involved, one of the either the student record or the course record machine, I unplug and then plug back in and restart. Or alternately, you know, more realistically, like it loses power because, you know, we have a thunderstorm or something. So let's start, see, who wants more time? Okay, so who thinks A is possible? Couple people. Who thinks B is possible? Okay, some people think, okay. C? Okay, C is possible. D is possible? Okay, so one thing to note is that all the things that were possible without a machine failure are still possible, right? Because what could happen is we could do our operation and the failure could happen after it's all done, right? Like right after it's done. So everything that was possible before, still possible. So that means C and D are possible because of that. Though what's worse is that now what could happen is we add the machine locally, course locally, and then say the machine that stores the student record goes down. And if it does that, it will never get the acknowledgement back. So probably it's possible that we will never add the record on the student side, even though it's added for the course. So we can have sort of the same scenario as C, but there's no amount of waiting which will cause us to actually have the student be added to the course. So this is the same kind of scenario we talked about with file systems, like where we moved a file and we had like a file in two directories at once rather than moved, or in the original directory. So another concern we might have is, I kind of didn't talk about how do we make sure that when we add a student to a course locally, that if we have a power failure, that we persist that information. We didn't actually talk about that, and that's an important question we need to know. Because if we think of how like our page cache worked, when we wrote things to a file, we often didn't actually write them to the disk, which meant they were just in memory, which meant we would lose them on a power failure. So if we think we aren't implementing the add operation by actually writing down on the disk, but just storing something in memory, like writing to a file usually is, then it's possible that it hasn't been written to the disk yet, therefore we could also lose the data that way and end up with sort of scenario A and B if that was possible. You might say, wait a moment, probably we should design the system so at least when we do something locally, we write it to disk. And that's probably a good idea, But it's not an assumption I actually state. And it's not something that's going to happen unless you make sure it happens. Okay, so questions? Yes. So for CND, there's two ways it can happen. So one way is just as before, we could just be observing in this time window here. Another thing which could happen is that a machine failure could happen before we actually add it locally, in which case we would never, in this case, there's no way we would tell when coming back up to actually do the local add, because we wouldn't have the response from the remote server. Does that answer your question? So there's sort of, two possibilities. With no failure, checking between, remote plus local operation, local, and two, with failure, local operation never happens. So there are two ways that sort of scenario can happen. Other questions? Yes.
So you tell the remote to add first, if the local gets power loss, and the remote is sending a knowledge to the local, then does the local ever update its own record path?
So the question is, if the remote gets a power loss, does the local So the local gets a power loss, does the local ever update its records later? So the problem is we need a reason for the remote machine to, so the remote machine is going to send an acknowledgement, but the remote machine is probably not checking if that acknowledgement gets there. Something, and when the local machine comes back up, why is there going to be a reason? It's going to ask for the acknowledgement again or something like that. We haven't built that in our naive solution. So we're going to need to add something to make one of the machines involved in this know, wait a moment, we were in the middle of something, when something failed, we need to go back to that. But here we don't have that mechanism, so there's no reason to think it will happen. Yes? If it doesn't have that mechanism, would that be why D is correct? So D could happen from the scenario we described before, that the first time we checked was in this time window, and the next time we checked was in this time window, and things didn't fail at a time which mattered. There was a machine failure, but maybe it was before we did it or after everything happened. Does that answer your question?
But if D says do not agree, wouldn't checking before or after both those mean that?
Sorry, I meant C. I meant this for C. I am sorry. I meant 1 and 2 are both possible for D, yes. I'm being inconsistent. So D is the case where they still don't agree when we double check. That's what I meant. And the machine failure here, that's what would cause that. So the question is, how could they agree afterwards?
Or how would they disagree? They can't agree.
How would they disagree? I guess what's confusing here is I should use a different phrasing here. By agree, I mean that, here they don't agree initially, and then they agree. That's what I mean by agree, not that they are the same as before. So in the C scenario, it would be just 1, right? We have no failures. We check first before the time window, then after the time window, where things are different. In D, we check both times in that time window, or we have a failure, meaning that we never actually do the local add. Does that answer your question? And I'm sorry for not being consistent about agree here. I should probably phrase this differently so I don't make that mistake. Yes? So is it, question, what's the final answer? Is it all 4? So it depends on what we assume can happen in a failure. So I think it's reasonable to say it's only C or D if you assume that when we do the remote or local add that we actually make sure that it goes to disk. though I didn't actually state that explicitly. If you don't assume that, then it's reasonable to say all of them are possible. Yeah.
So, in the case that we have, like, the change in the person to some sort of volatile child memory and it's lost, how would A be possible?
In the case where things could be written to volatile memory and it's lost, how could A be possible? So, we would, how would it be possible? C. Third course record, not in course. So I guess the sort of scenario which would cause A would be like, we tried to send the as student to course message, we had to retry it, and then the machine went down. Then the machine storing those course records went down, losing the ad that it did initially. Then it comes back up and it receives an old copy of the ad student course request. So it's possible, but yes, it's, you know, it's just that there's lots of weird things that happen when you consider, oh, we can have messages get, old messages get acted on and things like that. Yeah, there's some sort of scenario involving, like, we have some old message that gets acted on too late.
Okay.
You know, it's the sorts of things which could cause all sorts of weird scenarios to happen. But I would say, yes, A and B are pretty unlikely, even with non-volatile, with memory being lost. And I probably should note that, just because of the order we do things in. Okay. So we're going to talk about a solution that's sort of a more systematic solution than our naive idea. We're going to be careful about making sure we write down when things happen. And in this solution, each machine is going to handle its own data. And I'm mentioning this because there's a simple solution we could have which fixes this problem, which is that one machine stores all the student and course records. Problem solved. But that's not our solution. We're going to actually want to have the data still be separated. And also, a machine's going to be involved only if it has relevant data. So if I'm changing student A's information that's on server A, a different student which is on server B, I shouldn't need to talk to server B. If, you know, none of the information I'm dealing with is on that server. Or if I'm only changing student information, I should not need to talk to the server which maintains the course information. Also, we want to make progress as long as the machines that are relevant don't fail. So if we have those two student record machines, if one of them goes down, things should still work for half the students. Shouldn't be the case that the whole system goes down because of that. And like, ideally, this sort of system would work for like big distributed systems, but in practice, sort of the typical transaction we're going to worry about is like going to involve 1 to 3 machines. And we're going to have a solution that satisfies these properties, which we're going to call two-phase commit. And as you might guess from the name, it has two phases. So first, we're going to figure out what to do, then we're going to do it. This is the same sort of idea as redo logging. We're going to somehow write down what we're going to do, and then we're going to actually do it. And sometimes we'll have failures. If we have a failure, if we figured out what we're going to do, we're going to do it again, regardless of whether we already did it. So it's basically redo logging sort of expanded to the multiple machine case. And like with redo logging, we're going to use a persistent log. So each machine is going to have some durable storage that remembers what happened and is going to work despite a failure. So we're going to remember what was supposed to happen despite a failure. Now, each machine's only going to store information for its own machine, but we're going to have some identifier information to say each transaction we're doing, each operation is going to have some unique identifier so we can know which one it is, know not to repeat it, and so on. And we're going to have two different types of machines involved. We're going to have one machine we're going to call the coordinator. and the other machines are the workers. And I'm going to talk of these as separate machines. But in practice, what typically happens is one physical machine will run both the coordinator and one of the workers. But it's going to be easier to talk about this thinking about we have a coordinator machine that is separate, even though in practice it's probably going to be physically on the same hardware. And we're going to have a key rule, which is that we're going to not change anything. We're going to not do the operation if anyone involved, any coordinator or any worker, decides to abort. So every machine involved is going to have the option of saying, no, we can't do this. And if that happens, none of the operation is going to happen. And the sort of high-level idea of how the protocol is going to work is the coordinator is going to collect the worker's decisions. Hey, are you going to abort? You're going to not do this operation for me. And based on that collection, the coordinator is going to make a decision. So our workers are going to say, are we going to abort? We're not going to do it. Or they're going to commit. They're going to say, yes, I would like to do it. So if every worker says, we're going to commit, the coordinator is going to decide, OK, let's commit. If any worker says to abort, the coordinator is going to choose, let's abort. No one do the operation. Even though, yes, I know you two workers wanted to do the operation, but too bad, we're not doing it. And importantly, if the coordinator learns that a bunch of workers want to do the operation but doesn't hear from one of them, the coordinator can decide to either abort or to wait. So if there's nothing wrong, we actually do the operation. If some machine, says it can't do it, we don't do it. And if we're in doubt, it's safe for us to not wait for something to happen, to just say, hey, let's not do it. Because it seems like something's wrong, so let's just cancel this operation, since we haven't gone far enough for that to be a problem. Questions? Yes?
This sort of how parallel clusters.
Question is, this sort of how parallel clusters work? So it depends what type of parallel cluster we're talking about. So maybe the most common application of this protocol is for some databases distributed across multiple machines. This is not exactly what you do to do what we mentioned. Redundancy. Something notable here is if any worker fails, we just don't make progress. So if you want a system where you can make progress when a machine's failed, this is not going to do it. We have to have a very different type of solution. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah.
Just to be clear, this diagram is, we're only still talking about all the workers that are involved in a certain.
Question, for this diagram, we're only talking about all the workers that are involved in a search transaction. Yes. So any worker that's not involved is just not going to participate at all. So in our example, we had A, B, and C. A and C, if A had our student record and C had our course record, they would participate. B would never be contacted. Does that answer your question? Other questions? So one thing you might say is, why would a worker say abort? Why would it say we can't do this? And there's a whole bunch of reasons why. So it could be that there's some logical reason why we can't do the operation, the course is full, or it's invalid. Or it could be something the worker exposing a failure, I'm out of disk space, I can't do anything to these courses, sorry. And sort of generally, our attitude towards what if a transaction's aborted is just that we're going to say, no, try again later, basically. And maybe in a real system, we'd automate that retry process. But the key thing is that we're going to abort when there's some reason we can't make progress on this operation. And if a worker realizes that's true, for example, if it would violate a constraint like the course being full, or it just can't do the operation right now because like its disk is full, it's just going to say, no, we can't do that. Another reason why we'll do aborting is because we might have a conflict with another transaction. So for example, let's say a worker was asked, hey, add student Y to course A. And then a worker is asked to add another student to that course, and the course is now would be full if both students were added. The worker might not know that this first student we added will actually be added. And therefore, the worker might not be sure that we can't add the second student because maybe we're only adding one student in total. Maybe this first operation won't happen because the other machine involved will say, no, I'm out of disk space, I can't do that right now. The decision that the worker needs to make for this second transaction is it needs to say that I can't do that, or it needs to wait until it knows it can't. It cannot say yes to both of these operations if it would result in it violating its constraint that the course would be overloaded. So there's two options the worker has. The worker can just say no to the second transaction, say, I can't do that right now, sorry. And it's not that it's not possible to do, but it's just that it's agreed that it might do something that contradicts it. Or it can just say, not respond right away and say, okay, I'm going to assume that at some point that first transaction will finish, probably pretty soon, and then I can respond for the second transaction and say, yes, let's do that. But the key thing is it can't promise to do that it can do the second transaction until it's sure it can actually do it. But if it's not sure, it could just say no and have it be retried later. Yes? Question is, this transaction happened on two separate workers? So this is assuming the same worker because it's the same worker because it's the worker that's storing the information for the same course. So the question, the worker can't do transaction one and transaction two at the same time. So always transaction one will happen, then transaction two. So in this system, we're assuming transaction one started first. And if the worker agreed to do transaction one before it gets transaction two, then its options for doing transaction two are either it does it after transaction one because of is the course full issue, or it just says no. Just says, sorry, can't do that. Contact me some other time. Maybe it will happen. Maybe I'll allow it later. Maybe not. Does that answer your question? Yes?
If you do option one, is there possible, two students switching courses, it would result in a deadlock or something?
Question, if we do option one, is it possible it would result in a deadlock or something for two students switching courses? So our hope would be that the sort of switching courses operation but done by one student would either happen or not happen, right? So if we say not now, then transaction one would either happen or not happen. But your question is, could it be possible that maybe transaction one, because of some other machine's issue, fails, because of a similar constraint? Absolutely. And yes, we could have transaction one and two being retried over and over again. That is a thing which could happen. And databases in practice try to have mechanisms to avoid this happening if they use this type of retrying mechanism. For example, one thing they might do is they might detect that, oh, we're retrying an awful lot. Let's do one thing and then the other and not both at the same time. Does that answer your question? Yeah. How would the worker know when transaction two will be ready? So by until ready, I mean until the worker is ready to say if the course would be full. So when the worker got transaction two, it doesn't know if the course is full yet because it doesn't know if transaction one will happen. And when it would be ready to respond to transaction two, it would be ready after it knows yes or no answer to that question rather than a maybe. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Question, does that mean until turns action one is done? Until turns action one has either been resolved to happen or not happen. Does that answer your question?
Well, basically, when transaction one is done, transaction two will know whether it's full or not.
Yes. So when transaction one is done, transaction two will have a definite answer to can we do this or not.
Well, when it says abort, are these two transactions taking place at the same time?
Question, when we say abort, is there two transactions taking place at the same time? Yes, that's my assumption. Is that we start a transaction one, and before transaction one is done, we start a transaction two. Yes?
So the reason for transaction is waiting for the physical happen is because its coordinator is still collecting votes from its workers?
The question is, reason transaction one is not done is because the coordinator is still collecting votes from workers? Most likely, yes. It could also be something like the coordinator just crashed and it hasn't come back up for like the past hour. Or something like that. That answer your question? Other questions? Okay. So one thing we want to worry about in this system is we want to worry about reading values. And the typical way this is going to work is that in a database type system is that reads will involve a transaction. So in order to see who's in a course, we'll do a transaction on, with the course machine saying, tell me who's in the course. And, that will make sure that when we're reading those values, we commit that, they're not being changed while we're doing it. So an issue is that, in the example here, we don't want to read values about how many students are in course A while it's changing, because we don't actually know the number, right? So we want to have some rule about what we read. And so one option for this is that we're going to have a transaction and it's going to wait until that value is not changing in order to read it. There's some other options that are sometimes used, which is you might say, let's read inconsistent values, that's okay. We could also do that. But typically, if we actually care about keeping things consistent, we want the reads to use the same mechanism, where we might say, if you do a read, that, you can't read that now. I don't know how many people are in the course. We're going to have an assignment. We're not going to have transaction set up for reads, but we're going to have an unavailable flag. So we're going to have a read operation where you're going to say, I don't know what the value is because it's changing right now. I can't tell you if it's the old or the new value. Because it's one of them, but I can't tell you which one. So we'll just say it's not available right now. Ask again later, then I'll tell you what it is. Questions about this idea of reads, ensuring consistency by using transactions for reads? Yes?
So the unavailable flag is set while the transaction is taking place?
Question, the unavailable flag is set while the transaction is taking place? Yeah, so that's kind of equivalent to if we tried to do a transaction to check how many people are in the course, the machine would tell us, no, can't do that now. Does that answer your question? So if it was a transaction to read it, we've got the abort operation for the machines, or it would delay it and say, wait until later, then I can tell you how people were in the course. I can't tell you now. Yeah?
Is it fair to say that this is analogous to spin locks and atomic transactions that we talked about a couple months ago?
Question, is this kind of analogous to spin locks? Is this kind of analogous to locking? Yes. That sort of while a transaction's in progress, it kind of locks the stuff, and we can't use that lock stuff until it's done. And that's typically how a database would implement this kind of thing. Yes? What does influx mean? Means changing. Okay. Other questions? Okay, so we mentioned we're going to have this voting process. And a key thing that's going to make this work is that we're going to avoid changing our mind. So if a worker agrees not to abort, if it sends that commit vote, I would like to commit this transaction, I would like to actually do it, it can't change its mind. It can't then say, the course actually is full, let's not do that. It has to abide by what it said earlier. And if a coordinator makes a decision and tells anyone about it, it can't change its mind. And this means that we need to remember these decisions despite power loss and so on. So we're going to need to write down in our log just in case, when we make any of these decisions, when we agree that I would like to do this transaction, or the coordinator determines that everyone agreed to do this transaction, let's do it. Or the coordinator determined, I didn't hear from someone, let's not do this operation. He needs to write that down so we don't change our mind later. Because if we change our mind later, what could happen is, well, some machines could get the old decision, and some machines could get the new decision. And then we'd have some in-between thing happen. And that's what we were trying to avoid. We wanted to have it either happen or not happen. We don't want anything in between. Okay, so I sort of have our high-level view. Let's talk about what our sort of system for doing this two-phase commit is going to be more formally. We're going to have the first phase I'll call preparing. In this phase, the workers will tell the coordinator their votes. They'll say, I agree to commit this, or I agree to abort this. And then we'll have the second phase. The coordinator will get all the votes together and decide, make a decision, and tell all the workers, here's what we're doing. We're all doing this operation, or we're all not doing this operation. So in the preparing phase, you know, the worker's going to say, I agree to commit. And that's a promise that cannot be revoked, that I will accept this transaction later. Doesn't mean the transaction will happen, because someone else might say, can't promise that. But that it's a promise, so they're going to record it in the log so they don't forget it later. So they don't at one point say, yes, I'll accept the transaction, and then say, no, I won't, because the coordinator might act on the first day. We wouldn't want that contradiction. Or the worker might say, I will not accept this transaction. It will record that so it doesn't contradict it later, and never take this back. Yes? Question, does this happen in the first phase? Yes. So these are the votes. And since this is a promise, the workers are going to have to do the work of not only recording their vote, but making sure they'll keep the promise. So for example, in the case of adding a student to the class, we should make sure that seat remains available until we determine whether this is happening or not. So the coordinator is going to make a decision based on its votes. It can't take it back, so it's going to make sure it's not forgotten. And you might say, what happens if we have a coordinator failure? You know, if the coordinator goes down, the coordinator can always collect the votes again. Why can it do that? Well, because all the workers remember the votes. So the coordinator is going to make its decision. It's going to tell all the workers, hey, it's going to either say, commit, let's actually do this transaction. And then the worker will apply the transaction, and it will say, oh, now I can do these other things that might have depended on whether or not that happens. Or the coordinator says, I'm not doing it. And the worker will just undo any partial effects of the transaction. It doesn't mean we can't do that operation. Like, if we fail to add you to the course now, we could try again later, but it's going to be a new transaction with a new vote. Now, you might say, well, what happens if a worker doesn't get a response from a coordinator? So there's two ways we can handle this. So one thing is that the worker could say, oh, if I've been waiting on this transaction for a minute, let's ask the coordinator and say, what's happening? Another option is that the coordinator can make sure that the worker gets the result. So the coordinator can tell the worker, please commit the transaction, and have the worker send back, yes, I did it. And if the coordinator doesn't get that yes, I did it message, it just sends it again. It says, hey, I didn't hear last time. Please commit the transaction and keep trying until it happens. And option two is what we're going to do in the upcoming assignment. We're going to have, when we tell the worker, please commit this, we're going to make sure it says yes. And if not, we're going to try again. Yes? Does it send it out to all the workers or just the workers? Question, does it send it to all the work? Do all the workers need to say, yes, I got it? Yes, we're going to send it to each worker individually. Each worker that needs to do something for the transaction. Remember, when I started out, I said any worker that isn't involved in the transaction, we never talked to. that answer your question?
So if you have five workers, four of them got the output for 1 minute, so all of them send a form request for it, or?
Oh, question. If we have four workers, five workers, and four of them got the outcome and one didn't, so in option one, the one that didn't would ask the coordinator, say, hey, I haven't heard from you. What happened? In option two, the coordinator would know it didn't get an acknowledgement from the fifth worker, and it would keep trying until it did. Does that answer your question? Yes.
So, isn't that like an external system talking? Does it talk with the coordinator or the worker?
We have an external system talking. Does it talk with the coordinator or the workers? So, sort of the typical thing is that you talk, you either would be the coordinator or you would talk with the coordinator. And I mentioned when I started out that often the coordinator is physically located on the same hardware as one of the workers. So you might talk to a machine that is running one of the workers and that will run this coordinator code.
So when the workers are
making a promise to the coordinator, yes. And that promise doesn't matter unless all the workers actually make the promise as far as the overall outcome. Okay. Other questions? Yeah.
In the previous slide, there's a saying that the coordinator recollects votes.
Yeah, so
the coordinator keeps the logs of initiating the transaction. Is that why it's going to collect the votes?
Question is, why is the coordinator going to collect the votes in the failure? It's because the coordinator keeps the logs of initiating transaction? Yeah. So the coordinator knows it started the transaction, and it's going to have to log that if it wants to do it again on the failure. Yeah, and that's going to let it know when it comes back up, oh, I have a transaction, I don't know what happened with it, let me ask for the votes again. Does that answer your question? Other questions? Yeah. What if the coordinator tries to send messages but it fails?
No, what if the coordinator shuts down?
What if the coordinator gets shut down? So in this system, I mentioned we're not dealing with running while machines have failed. We're just making sure things are consistent. So the system is not going to work properly, but it's not going to give inconsistent results until the coordinator comes back up. When the coordinator comes back up, it's going to finish doing whatever the transaction was. Other questions? Okay. So let's think about this. So we have sort of the overall outcome. I'm going to do a sort of a more formal version of this. That we have sort of these five different messages we send. So first, the coordinator sends to the worker what I'll call a prepare message. It says, will you agree to do this for me? And we're going to send that. Sometimes, if we have a failure, we might need to resend it over and over again, but we're going to say, will you do this operation for me? The worker is going to send back, I agree to do it, or I agree not to do it. Then the coordinator is going to send to the worker, hey, either commit or abort. It's going to say, I counted the votes, and the result is commit, we're all going to do it. Or I counted the votes, and the result is abort, or someone didn't get back to me, so I'm deciding to abort anyways. So how would this sort of look in normal operation? So our coordinator is going to tell the workers, hey, let's do this operation. The workers are going to send back, oh, I agree to do it. The coordinator is going to say, OK, let's actually do it. And in the middle of this process, we have to write down where we are in the log so we don't forget it, because failures could happen. So a way we could write this down is we could write down what I call our current state, and I'll have a state machine I'll show you later. So we'll say our coordinator starts in this waiting state, where it's waiting for votes from the workers. And once it gets all the votes, and if they all say to commit, it goes to this commit state. And it writes down in the log that we're in that state. Why do we do that? Because we need to make sure we remember on a failure that I went to tell the workers we're committing. So if I have a crash, say here, I know I can tell the workers we're committed. If I have a crash between when I send these two commit messages, I know I can tell the other worker we've committed. So that's where we're writing it down. And similarly, our workers are going to write down in their log, oh, I agreed to commit this. So if there's a failure, they know what to send back to the coordinator to make sure it's consistent next time. Questions? Yes.
So after the coordinator tells workers to commit, can the coordinator be informed if the workers finish commuting
together? A question, after the worker coordinator tells the workers to commit, can the coordinator be informed workers have committed action? Yes. And this would be how the coordinator would clean up its log. Other questions? Okay. So we could also have a case where we have some sort of conflict. So for example, maybe worker says, oh, I can't do this. The class is full, or it might be full. We'll abort the operation. The coordinator collects all the votes and says, let's abort it. And similarly, we have to record this stuff. So worker one's going to record, I aborted this. I'm never going to agree to commit it. And the coordinator records, oh, I got an abort vote. We're aborting this. So if I have a failure, I know what to tell everyone. You know, if I come back up, I'm going to tell everyone we're aborting it. Some questions about sort of our operation without actual machine failures. So let's do this question. So in which of these circumstances can a worker send a vote to abort? So if it receives two prepare messages for the same transaction, can it send an abort to the second one if it sends a commit to the first? That's A. Can it send a vote to abort if its log indicated that's what it did before? But before the coordinator actually asks it, tells it any decision. Can it send a vote to abort if its log said it previously voted to commit, but it hasn't gotten anything from the coordinator in a long time? Or can it send a vote to abort if the coordinator was down for a long time? Let's start, go through. So let's start with who thinks A is possible. Couple people. Okay, so A is, we got two prepare messages. They were duplicates. And we responded to the first with commit. We got a second one. So why did we get a second one? Well, probably because the coordinator didn't get a response to the first one. But the answer is that we cannot do this. And so one reason we can't do this is just that what I told you earlier is that when we make a promise, we never, ever take it back. So if I send, and I agree to a commit, I never, ever contradict that. Now you might say, wait a moment, how could it matter? Obviously, the coordinator doesn't have our first response, and well, it would seem so. But maybe it's one of those late messages. Remember, we could say messages could be delayed. So maybe it got it, but it just didn't realize it in time before it tried again. And it might still get it, and therefore we might end up sending contradictory information to the coordinator, and that would be very bad. The coordinator could decide to commit the transaction even though we think it's aborting, and then the transaction might end up being half done. Yes? Question is the prepare message for the same transaction? Yes, that's my assumption because of duplicate. So, yes, this is same transaction, sorry.
Could there be the case where the coordinator actually sent two prepare messages and voted commit and like basically took a resource, but like offer resource, but now it was like full?
The question is could we have prepare messages that you know, for two different transactions, so the second can't happen, but because of the resource exhaustion, yes. But they'd be different prepare messages, so one thing we're gonna have to do if we have multiple transactions going on is all our messages need to identify what transaction are they for. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
Other questions? Okay, how about B? Who thinks we can do B? So B is absolutely a thing we can do. We can always tell the coordinator or vote multiple times. It's not going to change anything. coordinator is still collecting all the votes. And maybe we tell our coordinator the vote extra times if we thought it didn't get it the first time. And, well, it can figure out, you know, how to make sure, you know, deal with duplicates. How about C? So we can do C. Things we can't do C. Most people, yes. So C, again, this is, we can't change our mind. Even if we're pretty sure the transaction can't actually happen now, we can't change our mind. You know, we agreed that we would let the transaction happen. We're not the ones who can say, no, it doesn't happen. And for the same reason, we can't do D. Even though we're pretty sure, well, the coordinator's down. Obviously, it can't do the transaction. We're not the ones who get to decide that. Because it might be the case that the coordinator's going to come back up at any time and tell everyone to do the transaction. And if we do, so if we decide not to do it, then, well, we have that sort of half-done operation, and that would be very bad. That's exactly what we're trying to avoid. Okay, so how about, same question for the coordinator. So we'll just do, okay, how about, let's try B and C here. So B, so can the coordinator tell the workers to abort if its log says it decided to commit, but if the log, but the log doesn't say anything about actually sending any of those messages to workers? Thinks, yes, it can. Thinks, no, it can't. Okay, so no, it can't. So there's two reasons. So one is that I told you when we decide to commit, it's a promise. The other thing is that we don't actually log that we sent it to the workers, right? We wouldn't expect the log to do that unless we have some sort of policy that we log, I'm sending it to worker N before I do it. So there's no policy says we log before sending to each worker. We log when we make the decision. We don't log before sending. Therefore, not being in the log doesn't actually tell us whether or not it happened. How about C, who thinks, you know, after it sends a request to vote for a worker, but it doesn't get a reply, probably because of a network problem, who thinks it can decide to abort? Thinks it cannot decide to abort. Okay, so it can decide to abort. And this, even though might be the case that the worker didn't, remember, this is in our original scenario. This is the unknown case. We don't know if the worker we couldn't contact decided to abort, but we can always decide, well, I don't know what's going to happen. Let's just assume we can't do it. And the key thing, why is that okay? Well, it's okay because at least we're going to be consistent. Everyone's not going to do the operation. Some questions about that? What is A? I didn't talk about A for time, but A is if we reboot after a crash, if we got votes from all but one worker, can we decide to abort? Yes. And why can we do that? Because we can just say, I don't know one of the workers, I can decide to abort. Like, would I be better maybe to contact an extra worker? Yes, but I don't have to. Yes. Would that still be true if there's not a large number of workers not contacted? Yes, I can always decide to abort. It's safe. Like, I shouldn't do it if there's no failures, but it's always safe to decide to abort, and it's probably the easiest way of dealing with a failure. It's just, let's not do this, try again, see if it works next time. Did I answer your question? Yeah. Can I explain B? So, when we talked about what we're logging, we log that we make a decision. We don't log when we contact each worker. So it's going to be normal for us not to have a log entry saying, I contacted worker one, I was about to contact worker one. Right, so not seeing that in our log doesn't actually tell us whether or not the worker knows about the decision.
We still have to commit because we already decided to commit.
And we still have to commit because we decided to commit, yes. We don't take back the decision ever. Okay, so something about how two-phase commit works is that I mentioned that, you know, we can't allow conflicting actions. That, like, if I say I might add a student to the class, I have to assume the class is full, even though that operation might not happen. And I have to do that until I know the transaction is definitely going to happen or not going to happen. I have to sort of assume the worst. And you might say, well, how long could we end up waiting to know what the outcome of the transaction is? And the answer is forever. Right? A machine could go down and never come back up. And this can happen in practice. In practice, that's going to require manual intervention. If the machine goes back down and never comes back up. And a compromise we've made in this design is that we're going to say that if, you know, a machine goes down, we're going to have this sort of stalled operations for a long time. If the machine's down for a long time. And that's a decision we've made because we care about never telling someone you're in a course when you're not, for example. Okay, so in our last few minutes, show you sort of the state machines for the two-phase protocol. So for reasoning about protocols, we want to have a way where we can easily like make sure we've handled all the cases. And a common way to do this is a state machine. So every machine will have a state it's in, which is going to be one of a short list of possible states. And we're going to have it written down every type of message. What do we do if we get it in this state? And by doing this systematically, we can make sure we didn't miss a case. And so this is sort of a common way of sort of reasoning about how do I design my distributed system to make sure, you know, I don't miss cases about what do I do and sort of reason about, you know, things. And this means that, you know, I'm not going to have a case where, oh, I got a commit message, but I haven't gone very far. What should I do? We're going to write that down. We're going to decide in advance. So here's our coordinator state machine. We have some initial state before we send prepare, and then we send prepare, and that makes us go to the waiting state. And then we either get all our commit messages and we go to this committed state, or we get any abort message and we go to this abort state, or we get no reply and we decide to go to this abort state. So our waiting state here is we accumulate votes. And also in this state, if we don't get votes, we can just resend prepare. And this is going to be a common theme that generally in these schemes, we're going to say, you know, what if I'm waiting too long? I just try to do the thing I do when entering the state again. So similarly, if I'm in the aborted state and I'm not getting responses from my workers, or the workers ask me what's going on, I tell them, we're aborting. I just send that message out. I also send it when I enter the state. When I enter the commit state, I tell the workers, we're committing. If the workers ask me again what's happening, I say, oh, we're committing. If I say, get a vote from a worker again, I say, oh, we're committing. So sort of a less simplified version might look like this if I'm recording what we're doing. So in the waiting state, we get our votes. If we aren't getting votes, we tell them to prepare again, or we decide to go to abort. In the aborted state, I just tell them to abort until they get it. In the committed state, I tell them to commit until they get it. Okay, and we'll look at this a little more next time. I think we have enough to do the assignment at this point. We'll talk more about the assignment on next Tuesday, do a little Q&A on that, and then talk a little about security in OSs.